All right, welcome to this class. I'm glad you're here. These two questions on the top of the board are just random questions for you to think about while we're having class. Hopefully they don't distract too much. Remind me if I forget to tell you the answers before we dismiss. I'll ask for some responses. I also put a few quotes about perseverance on the board. There's two verses in Hebrews that I want to start off this lesson with. They say this: "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." Also, please fill in blanks on your papers as much as you want to. You're not required to, but I would like to get some responses from you on that later. So we have a couple quotes here about perseverance. The middle one was a very interesting one to me. I never really thought about getting to the ark from the snail's perspective, but it would have taken a little bit of work. There's also a quote that says, "Perseverance is not a long race. It is many short races, one after the other." I have a few more, but I think I'll wait to read those. There's a poem I'm going to read that is a really inspiring poem to me. If you've heard it before, just let it inspire you again. It's called "Get Up and Win the Race." "Quit, give up, you're beaten," they shout at me and plead. "There's just too much against you now. This time you can't succeed." And as I start to hang my head in front of failure's face, my downward fall is broken by the memory of a race. And hope refills my weakened will as I recall that scene. For just the thought of that short race rejuvenates my being. A children's race, young boys, young men, how I remember well. Excitement? Sure. But also fear. It wasn't hard to tell. They all lined up so full of hope, each thought to win the race. Or tie for first, or if not that, at least take second place. And fathers watched from off the side, each cheering for his son. And each boy hoped to show his dad that he would be the one. The whistle blew and off they went, young hearts and hopes afire. To win and be the hero there was each young boy's desire. And one boy in particular, whose dad was in the crowd, was running near the lead and thought, my dad would be so proud. But as they speeded down the field across a shallow dip, the little boy who thought to win lost his step and slipped. Trying hard to catch himself, his hands flew out to brace, and mid the laughter of the crowd, he fell flat on his face. So down he fell, and within him hope, he couldn't win it now. Embarrassed, sad, he only wished to disappear somehow. But as he fell, his dad stood up and showed his anxious face, which, to the boy, so clearly said, get up and win the race. He quickly rose, no damage done, behind a bit, that's all, and ran with all his mind and might to make up for his fall. So anxious to restore himself, to catch up and to win, his mind went faster than his legs, he slipped and fell again. He wished then he had quit before with only one disgrace. I'm hopeless as a runner now, I shouldn't try to race. But in the laughing crowd he searched and found his father's face, that steady look which said again, get up and win the race. So up he jumped to try again, 10 yards behind the last. If I'm to gain those yards, he thought, I've got to move real fast. Exerting everything he had, he gained 8 or 10. But trying so hard to catch the lead, he slipped and fell again. Defeat, he lay there silently, a tear dropped from his eye. There's no sense running anymore. 3 strikes, I'm out. Why try? The will to rise had disappeared. All hope had fled away. So far behind, so error-prone, a loser all the way. I've lost, so what's the use, he thought. I'll live with my disgrace. But then he thought about his dad, who soon he'd have to face. Get up, an echo sounded low. Get up and take your place. You were not meant for failure here. Get up and win the race. With borrowed will, get up, it said. You haven't lost at all. For winning is no more than this, to rise each time you fall. So up he rose to run once more, and with a new commit he resolved that win or lose, at least he wouldn't quit. So far behind the others now, the most he'd ever been, still he gave it all he had and ran so as to win. 3 times he'd fallen, stumbling, 3 times he rose again. Too far behind to hope to win, he still ran to the end. They cheered the winning runner as he crossed the line first place, head high and proud and happy, no falling, no disgrace. But when the fallen youngster crossed the line in last place, the crowd gave him the greater cheer for finishing the race. And even though he came in last with head bowed low, unproud, you would have thought he'd won the race to listen to that crowd. And to his father he sadly said, "I didn't do so well." "To me you won," his father said. "You rose each time you fell. And now when things seem dark and hard and difficult to face, the memory of that little boy helps me in my own race. For all of life is like that race, with ups and downs and all. And all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall." "Quit! Give up! You're beaten!" they still shout in my face. But another voice within me says, "Get up and win the race." That poem is special to me. I very much enjoy it. It's very deep truths in there. So, we're talking in this class about perseverance, and I wonder what makes people persevere. I don't know when it was, but there was this man named Aaron Ralston, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, and he was hiking alone in the wilderness somewhere, all by himself. And as he was hiking, somehow he managed to dislodge a boulder, and this boulder pinned his arm in such a way that he could not get out. He was stuck. It was too big of a rock for him to move on his own, and he could not get out. He was there for several days with very little food and water. He was expecting to die, and finally it got to the point that he amputated his own arm with a pocket knife, and he freed himself, and he was able to get away. And he lived through it. How many of you have read the book Endurance about Ernest Shackleton? If you haven't, you should. It's a very, very interesting book. But Ernest Shackleton set out on a mission to go across Antarctica with a group of men. And on their way there, their ship was stuck in ice and they couldn't move. And the ice broke the ship up, and they ended up having to live out there for a year and 7 months, roughly. They were out there for a long time with just what they had on the ship, and they couldn't even get all that out. What kept them going? What kept them going? What made a young boy named Ben Carson rise above a very less than ideal home life? He didn't have, he had a dad, but his dad wasn't at home. His mom raised him. But he went on to become one of the world's most famous neurosurgeons. What caused that? What made Abraham Lincoln, who was from way back in the sticks, become one of the most well-known presidents in our country? What made Joseph, who again and again and again was thrown all these injustices, what made him rise to become a high up government position? What made the Apostle Paul continue to burn with passion for the Lord in spite of all the stuff that he had faced? What keeps a teacher going on the days when you just going to school is about the last thing you feel like doing? It feels like everything's falling apart around your ears. What makes a little boy climb back on his bike after he's fallen, and he keeps getting back on and getting back on until he can effortlessly sail down the lane without holding on to the handlebars? So in all these things, there's one common thread that I see, and that's perseverance, that word perseverance. So from you, what names did you write down on this blank, these blanks? So what names come to your mind when you hear the word perseverance? Does anybody want to share any? Doesn't matter if we don't know them.
One person that came to mind, I have a cousin, second cousin that was in a car accident, and he's paralyzed pretty much right now.
Okay.
And he's in a wheelchair, but he's very independent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. More.
Different battle characters, but Elijah. Preaching
or
teaching people who didn't
want to
hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And
he just kept doing it because it was right.
Yeah. Thank you. More.
I have a teacher at school. He's presented here, wasn't presented, Boyd Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
The wheelchair preacher gets in that van, gets out of that van.
Any more?
Thomas Edison.
Yeah.
Thomas Edison.
Yeah, there's some quote from him about, forget. Somebody asked him, he was trying to figure out what to use for the light bulb, the filament in the light bulb, and I forget how many different things he tried, but somebody asked him, doesn't it make you discouraged when you tried this 900 things or whatever and they didn't work? And he's like, nope, that just means there's 900 things that didn't work. I just figured out the 900 things. I don't think it was 900, but it was a lot. Okay, thank you for those. So we're going to focus on some principles that, some, I call them overarching principles. That sounds really highfalutin, but principles that apply to perseverance. And you'll notice on that sheet that I gave you, we're going to look at four different things we can focus on that hopefully can be an encouragement in helping us to maintain this drive when our hands hang low, as it says in the description of this class, because you don't have to live life very long to realize that there are days when the hands hang low, really low sometimes. A lot of things can play into that. Yes. All right, so again, I'm going to ask you to share what you write down if you have anything that comes to mind on any of these points. So the first principle I have written down is to focus on God. Now, did you write anything down for what are ways we can focus on God while we when we teach? Okay. We'll move into this, and if you have more to share later, then I'll try to remember to ask again. But in my mind, go ahead.
I just thought of one personal example. I had a boy that I was almost positive he was lying to me about something, but I did not have enough evidence yet to be sure, and I'm sure it was the Holy Spirit just brought it to my mind to wait. What he was doing was irritating, and I was ready to be done with it, but I still was not quite sure. And so I just waited. And there was a lot of liberty in just, this is God.
Mm-hmm.
God is going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. God is not okay with lying if that's what he's doing.
Right.
It's not my fleshly tendency.
Right. Wait. And part of our profession is being in charge, directing the classroom. And so, at least for me, it's really hard to just release that all. Like, it almost feels like you're deserting your calling or whatever if you release it all to somebody else. But thankfully, God can handle it. Anything else that came to your mind?
How often this happened to myself, these are God's children.
Right.
They're not mine.
Right.
I'm just a
student. Right. God's children. It's a little bit hard to handle sometimes. At least for me, I can get this sense of entitlement almost to my students and get connected to them. Thank you. More. We already read a verse in Hebrews that says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Perseverance. To the end, Jesus went the whole way. Didn't let anything stop him. Paul says in 2 Timothy, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. In Joshua 14, and I lost my Bible, I don't know where it went. Look at the Bible right here. You may be familiar with the story of Caleb when he was an older man, and I mean older man. It says he was 85 years old. And it's very inspiring to me what he told to Joshua. This is when Joshua was giving out the inheritance to the children of Israel. And let's see. I'm just going to read a few verses here. Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said unto him, Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war, both to go out and to come in. This is an 85-year-old man talking, and he says that I am just as strong now to go out and conquer as I was when I was 40 years old. That's impressive, and I hope that my testimony can be that when I get to be 85, if the Lord allows me to live that long. But perseverance, he was on a mission, and he wasn't letting things detract from it. So we're focusing on God. And it goes without saying that as teachers, God must be our source of strength. That's just nothing. There's no other way to get around that. And it follows naturally that if God is our source of strength, God never runs out of strength. And so, guess what? We won't run out of strength either. That sounds very idealistic, but it can be true. Can be true in your life. But it takes a dedication and a commitment to Christ that requires a lot. We've already heard a little bit about spending time with God, but under this point, I'm going to just emphasize as strongly as I can that we must, every day of the year, 365 days of the year, 7 days a week, no exceptions, we must find the time to be with God. That's about as direct as I can say it. Now, we eat a lot, and we like to eat, or I do. People eat, and our bodies need that. And for most of us, at least, if you go without a meal, well, then at some point you start getting sounds in the stomach and you feel hungry. The Bible is our spiritual food, and my question is, do I feel the same hunger pangs in my spiritual life when I skip a meal that I do when I skip a meal in the physical sense? If we're without food for a week, and you can't live that long without food, but you're going to experience a lot of negative side effects, and you won't have much energy, you won't be able to do a lot. We'll be weak. What effect does it have on us if we happen to go a week without our time with God? Does that result in the same thing in our spiritual lives? And I'm here to tell you that no matter how strong you think you are, you will reach a point, if you're skipping your time with God, you will reach a point sometime where the only way you're going to move forward is if you can depend on God. Because His power is the only thing that can overcome some of those things that we face in life. And when you're in a time of stress or when you're in a time of physical hard work, you need food. It doesn't go well without food. And in the same way, our spiritual lives, it won't go well without our spiritual food. You need that fuel. So your body burns your food to make fuel so you can work. You need that spiritual fuel. And I want to also point out here that God's our Father. And remember the Father in that poem? His encouragement was, get up and win the race. Get up and win the race. And I think that's God's call to all of us when our hands are hanging low. And His encouragement to us is the same, because He's watching when we fall. He doesn't miss that. Was there anything else that came to your mind? Ways that we can focus on God in maintaining our perseverance. All right, let's move on to focusing on your students. What are some ways you thought of that we can focus on our students when we teach?
Look them in the eyes.
Okay. Thank you. Look them in the eyes. What else?
Think about how they feel.
Think about how they feel.
I think it's a little harder when you have first and second graders and you feel like something that you're trying to have them do is really, really easy.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in tears because they can't.
Right.
Right.
Sometimes that happens with older students than first and second grade. Yes, think about how they're feeling. Of course, they need to think about how we're feeling too, right? What else?
Remember that students are a work in progress.
Right.
That the first grader that can't figure them out, or even an eighth grader.
Right.
Sometimes that's where our perseverance, for me, sometimes really gets put to the test. You know,
mm-hmm.
Do I just give up on them?
Right.
Am I willing to get them halfway there today and the rest of the way tomorrow or a week from now?
Mm-hmm. A work in progress. The fact of the matter is, we're all a work in progress, and students are the same way. This responsibility that we've been given sometimes feels to me almost so big that it doesn't even feel like God should have given it to us in some ways because of our own weaknesses. But that's a chance for His power to show in your life as you influence the lives of your students. Now, you know this already, but each student that you have has special talents and abilities. And I'm talking even about Dora, who's in sixth grade and always has a smart remark to anything you say. I'm also talking about Bill, who's in second grade and he always spills something during lunch recess. Always. I'm also talking about Beth, who's in eighth grade and she has kind of a hard time reading and she doesn't socialize very well with the other students. And I'm talking also about Rob, who's in 10th grade, and when you play a running game, his arms and legs are everywhere, and he trips over himself. Okay, each one of those students, you probably can picture some people in your mind as I'm talking there, but each one of them is special and has a talent, or lots of talents, actually. The poem Molder of Dreams was referenced earlier in these meetings, and I hadn't read this poem for a long time. I just read it recently and it really struck me. Here it is. And this, it's called Teachers, or the title is, maybe it's called Molders of Dreams. I'm not sure on that, but there was a public school teacher named Guy Dowd, and he met President Ronald Reagan in the White House, and Ronald Reagan gave him this poem. Here it is. You are the molders of their dreams, the gods who build or crush their young beliefs of right or wrong. You are the spark that sets aflame the poet's hand or lights the flame of some great singer's song. You are the gods of the young, the very young. You are the guardian of a million dreams. Your every smile or frown can heal or pierce a heart. Yours are 100 lives, 1,000 lives. Yours the pride of loving them and the sorrow too. Your patient work, your touch, make you the gods of hope who fill their souls with dreams to make those dreams come true. That poem just says it so well. You as a teacher are a catalyst that can, produce tremendous effects in the lives of your students, or can have tremendous damage depending on how things go. And God also has a plan for each of your students, and part of what your job is helping them get to the point where they can fulfill that plan. And that should be an overarching goal for us. Helping them get to the place that they can fulfill the plan God has for them. Not the plan that you think should be for them, but the plan that God has for them. So, a couple ways that I had written down. We already heard some good things about how we can focus on our students. Pray for your students. Be specific. Pray for them by name. Every day. It's okay if they know that you pray for them. You can even pray for them publicly if you care to. Take time to learn to know what your students are interested in. And this is something that comes easier the longer you are with a particular group of students. but it's just very fun to connect with a student on a level, something that they're interested in. And it might require you to learn some things you never knew before. If you're a male teacher and you have teenage girls, you might be required to learn some things about sewing or gardening or horses or whatever your girls are interested in so that you can discuss. I have one, a former student sitting in here, and I don't know if I ever discussed that with her, but so that you can discuss things knowledgeably. If you're a lady teacher, you may end up having to learn about pickups or guns or log trucks or fishing or whatever. The list could go on and on of the different things that you could be required to learn about in order to be able to interact with your students. And if you're having a hard time figuring out what your students are interested in, listen to them talk during lunch or listen to them talk during recess amongst themselves, and it does not take long before you have a pretty good idea what makes them tick when they're relaxed and they don't know that you're listening. Also, if you have a chance to, try to interact with your students outside of school, on a level completely separate from school, doing things with them that are not connected with the classroom. If you happen to teach youth-age children, you might end up going to youth stuff with them. Sometimes it's not practical. You don't have an opportunity to be much with your students outside of school, but try if you can. It's very beneficial. Plan school activities for your students that help others, that relate to helping others. As I said yesterday, things like pizza parties, ice cream parties, it's easy to get students excited about those. But also work at trying to get them excited about going to help someone or going to sing for a shut-in or going to rake leaves for one of your preachers or whatever, things like that that really teach them to serve others, which is really one of our primary goals here on this earth, I believe. And it'll be contagious, eventually at least, because it is fun to help other people, even though it sometimes doesn't feel like as much fun right off the bat. And if your attitude towards the project is excited, well, they're going to be responding in the same way. Take time take time to indicate to your students that they are important to you. That they're each important to you, not just one or not just the whole class as a unit, but that each one is important to you. And again, this is something that also comes easier with time as you learn to know them better. But for one student, it may mean that you write them a note telling them that you really enjoyed their composition from Friday. For another student, it might be just a smiley face that you put at the top of their paper when they got 100%. It might just be, could even be just asking them some questions about something that they did in the past weekend. That might just make their day. Don't try to overdo it, because we have plenty of work already, and if we can come up with big ways to reward them, well, that's great, but the little things is what they're going to remember a lot of, and make sure you work hard to find those little ways. And don't assume that if you say, okay, class, I'm really glad you're here. Well, praise the Lord, I hope you are glad they're here. But that in itself is not going to give the individual feeling of, hey, this teacher appreciates me. Make sure you can do it something personalized if you can. And I know there has to be appropriateness there, but it'll communicate with the students, and they will respond. Make sure you praise when they make progress. I don't know how it is for you, but it is way easier for me to see the negatives faster than the positives. You guys need to do so, so, so. I wish it wasn't that way. It would make it easier if it was automatic to see the positives and then the negatives would just kind of tag along. But for me, it's easier to see the negatives. And there has to be moderation in praising too. You don't want to get over dramatic and excessive about this whole praise thing. But again, small stuff like a smiley face or like a small note can be tremendous. And make sure that you are praising each student. Find something in each one that you can praise, not just the specific ones. That will do nothing to raise your respect level among your students. What else did you think of on ways that we can focus on our students? Anything that you'd like to share? All right, let's move on to focusing on others. This one is could be very closely connected with our previous point because students are others. But I'm thinking here specifically about others in the church, people that are not connected with school directly. Did you write anything down for that? Anybody want to share something for that point?
One small thing I thought of was I would sometimes have like a prayer meeting and ask them to pray for someone, even sometimes outside of their family.
Yes. Pray for others. That's tremendous.
Use examples from, like maybe use their dad and mom as an example. That is tremendous, and I've heard that. I heard Jonah and Kyle Lehman both use Uwe as an example of something in their separate workshops. And that is just great for building respect for other people.
Use others as examples more.
I think I'll link that to something I found helpful is to promote the wisdom and importance of others in the church, whether it's the ministry or their parents, to build respect, the children's respect for these people by, you know, Monday morning, say, did you notice that excellent illustration Brother So-and-so used yesterday in church? Your children will start showing up Monday morning talking to you about stuff they noticed and stuff.
Yes.
You can build a lot of respect by doing that.
Yes. More.
This is just kind of an idea. I don't know if I necessarily have put it out that much, but involving others, just visit, involving others with the classroom and class.
Involving others, yes.
Just a suggestion. One way that I've done that is having those who came in for devotions tell a story about. One year I have them tell stories about a place that they've gone to out of the country or something like that. Another year about an experience they had as a child, and it was amazing the teachable material that came out of that. And it doesn't have to last long.
Yeah.
You get them in the classroom anyway.
And then it gives you something you can connect to later, maybe. You'll have your classes or something. Thank you for those. So, another thing I would say is participate in church functions as much as you can. As much as you can. I know there's excuses that pop up really fast, but do it as much as you can. If there's a singing at a rest home, you should be there. If there's a slide presentation about work in a foreign country, your students should see you there. If there's Christmas caroling, they should be singing right beside you, or you should be singing beside them. The church has special meetings. Your students should see you in church every night. If they don't, you'll probably have to answer questions about it. You better be ready with a reason. Now, for younger teachers, single younger teachers, attend youth functions, go to volleyball games, even if you're worn out. Go to work projects that are scheduled for the youth at older folks' homes. A lot of times, at least for me, when you spend time with your peers and other in just a relaxed setting where you're not in charge, you can just be with everyone else. Terribly refreshing, just very refreshing and helpful. And again, if you teach youth and you aren't at a youth function, there will be questions the next day, and I would recommend having a reason. I would recommend having a good answer. Also, see if there's a way you can learn to know people in your local community that you're teaching in. Now, for those of you that teach at home, this is going to be easier because you've lived there all your life. For those that teach away from home, it might be slightly more difficult. My aunt and uncle have a bakery in town, and I really enjoy just going in there and sitting and watching people and listening to them talk. And you can learn a lot of stuff. I've not really learned to know anybody very really, really well through that, but I do recognize some people now that I wouldn't otherwise. If you have an opportunity to work at a place like that while you teach, probably you won't, but if you do, that's a great way. If you can just go to places like that, and as you learn to learn to know the local people, you will come across opportunities to help them and share with them, and can maybe help get your students to help them and share with them. It's a great way to witness. It's a great way to get your mind off the pressures that school brings. Also, spend time learning to know the other families in church besides the ones that you relate to through school. Those that don't have school children in the school, or even those that don't have that have school children but maybe not in your classroom, if you, as much as you can, learn to know them, because there's so much you can learn from them just about church culture and about just life. I mean, they got lots of stories. And it'll do good things if your students especially see you interacting with other people, interacting with the other church people, rather than just being in your own shell all of the time. Any other ideas on focusing on others before we go to the last one?
Invaluable resources, mm-hmm. stories and facts about people who can remember things. My students are studying history.
Right.
So Brother John remembers in the tab.
Yeah.
It brings history to those.
Right. Yes. Okay. Focusing on yourself. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? Absolutely terrible. But we're looking at this in the positive sense. What can you do to keep yourself going, in maybe in a physical way? What came to your mind on this point? Anything?
Take time to read a good book.
Take time to read a good book. I like that. Sometimes when I get home from school after being with books all day, I don't feel like reading a good book, but I am very much a proponent of that. For one thing, it gives you stuff you can maybe use later, because the more information you take in, the more you'll have to pass out when you need it. Anything else?
Don't be afraid of admitting you're wrong and laughing at yourself.
Laugh at yourself. You've probably all done that, hopefully. If you haven't, you should try it. It's pretty interesting. More.
Do something active.
Do something active.
Right.
Right.
Just going for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Quiet. Yes.
Sleep.
Sleep.
I used to like Mondays more than other days of the week because I had the weekend. And I felt rested up, and
it
would be easier to be cheerful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sleep.
Just kind of what some of the other first thing, but I think just getting something to hang out with yourself,
mm-hmm. I like that one. Different people are different, and I love being with people, but sometimes I just need to be by myself for a while. And lots of things, good things can happen when that's the case. Bike ride, hiking was mentioned, reading a book, lots of different ways you can be by yourself. And sometimes if we're constantly with other people or constantly busy, God never has that chance to speak through His still small voice when we're always busy. Thank you. More.
I think it's okay to know your own strengths and weaknesses.
Right.
And to rejoice in the way God made you.
Right.
I mean, He gave you strengths and many different ones. And
right.
You should use the ones God gave you.
Mm-hmm.
And be satisfied with yourself, not try to be somebody else.
Right. Be yourself.
And along with that, don't compare yourself.
Right.
Yeah. It's easy to, like, oh, that person, they're so ideal.
Yeah.
I just can't quite get it all done.
Right. that's something that I fear in presenting a workshop. It's like people are going to look at me and like, my goodness, everything he knows what he's talking about. Just hopefully you don't come visit my classroom. Some days it's great. Some days it's a little bit rough, but you'll experience that if you haven't already. Some has already been mentioned about your physical health. Take care of yourself. Take care of your body. Exercise if you can besides your... I mean, if you need to, if you feel the need to get out and exercise, that's great. You will get a chance to exercise at recess, and take that chance. Play with your students. Run around and get sweaty. Fall down, and one time this past school year, I fell down and ripped my knee. Oh, I mean, not my knee, but my pants open, basically from seam to seam across my knee. And I'm not sure if the students saw it or not, but it was quite a sight. But the students like it when you're out there playing with them. And eat breakfast. Even if you don't think you're a breakfast person, it's good to get your body something to start digesting, get some fuel going. Don't live on coffee, Pop-Tarts, candy bars, party pieces, and pop. It's going to result in some roughness. Any more that you thought of?
A lot of school teachers are young and single. Something I found that helped me tremendously was not to forget my old friends. Like, you get into school teaching,
right,
and you get so involved with it, you forget all your former close friends.
Right.
But do you keep reconnected? It gives you an energy and a,
yes,
and a refocus on the work that you're in.
Stay connected with your friends.
Even older teachers. Just recently, really worked hard at renewing some friendships that I had since I was in school. And I found I had been missing something by not keeping up on this. And I think it's enriched all of my life, my students' lives as well.
Yeah. A couple more quotes about perseverance. Let's see. Perseverance is failing 19 times and succeeding the 20th. Through perseverance, many people win success out of what seemed destined to be a certain failure. This is a very interesting one to me. The difference between perseverance and obstinacy is that one comes from a strong will and the other from a strong won't. The difference between perseverance and obstinacy is that one comes from a strong will and the other from a strong won't. Men fail much oftener from want of perseverance than from want of talent. Might be hard to convince a seventh grader of that, but it's true. Anything more that's pressing on your mind to say about any of these points that we covered before we close? I would like to close with the verses we began with. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Thank you for being here. Thank you for participating.